listening to the Defenestrate Media Network.
It's Roast with J.M. Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
Okay, Ragnarok, you have me at Immigrant Song.
Oh, I know! Oh my God, I know.
It's perfect. My son looked at it and he just goes, now that's the right use.
The whole thing. Now look, I have enjoyed those movies to no end. I am a huge Thor fan. I have worn a Mjolnir around my neck for years before Marvel got around to putting that movie out. You know, I nicknamed my penis Odin.
Yes, okay.
Because he's got one eye and he does all the thinking for me.
And it loves to live in Valhalla.
Yeah.
Ba-dum.
That's very good.
I should have a rim shot here, but I don't.
It looks like, now, okay, here's the thing. There are two separate storylines with the Thor going on in this movie. And one is Planet Hulk, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Basically, all the smartest guys in the Marvel Universe, after a big fight, stick the Hulk into a spaceship, and they shoot him off to what should be another planet with no people on it where he can just hunt and run around and be hulky. But he gets knocked off course, thrown into a wormhole, and ends up on a gladiator planet. Blah, 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 ends up taking over the planet, breaks the planet into pieces, and then throws a giant rock that's been hollowed out with nice places to sleep and eat toward the wormhole that spat him out. So he basically builds a spaceship out of a gigantic rock and throws it at Earth. Has him and all of his gladiator buddies, to which we transfer from Planet Hulk to World War Hulk when he gets back to basically beat up everybody that shot him into space.
Oh, my God.
So we get to the gladiator planet in this thing, and there's Hulk, and yay, and that whole, he's a friend from work. Brilliant. But at the same time, Ragnarok is not a small word, either in the comic book Thor or Norse mythology. Ragnarok is a big fucking deal. So you've got Hell.
It's a big fucking deal. Hell, how so? Because there is a significant part of the family, my family, that comes from that warrior class.
Well, back in the early.
So when you're Swedish,
yeah.
When you're from Norway and Sweden, you know, that's no small thing.
Sure, it's hot chocolate and rape and pillage. So basically, in the early days, Loki was cheating on his wife with a giant, a lady giant. And he had three kids. And one, I cannot for the life of me remember his name, but he is the Serpent of Midgard. And then there is Fenrir the Wolf. And then there is Hel, H-E-L, who runs Hell, where all of the people who don't die gloriously go, where the bad guys go, and she punishes them for the rest of eternity. And Fenrir the Wolf has been tied down, and all the waters of the ocean come out of his mouth. Long story, and the Serpent of the Earth sleeps until it is woken. When it is woken, when Fenrir gets loose, and when Hell comes a marching, right? That is the end. That is Ragnarok. That is the thing that destroys the gods, wipes out all of the Norse pantheon, and then we move into another age. It's either come or not. And it's either going to happen again or not. And so it is apocalypse. It is the Norse version of everything being destroyed by fire, hurt, pain, etc. The only people that apparently live through it are like Baldur and a couple of other people. And they're in new form. They're not quite gods anymore. And so Ragnarok's a big word for a big thing that should take more than a part of a movie. So again, maybe they're just throwing the word out there because people know it and it's funny to them. But to me, as someone who, if I were not an atheist, would be of the Norse mythological persuasion, because and that's the thing, when people say, hey, what religion are you, and you can tell that if you tell them you're an atheist, you're gonna have problems. I'm usually, you know, you know, I'm Norse. I believe in the old gods. Because why not? So anyway, Ragnarok's a big deal. Planet Hulk's a big deal. I hope they don't fuck this up by trying to shove too much in the movie. But so far, and oh my God,
to this point,
if you're going to stick,
it's getting better.
If you're going to stick a helmet with wings on it on top of Chris Hemsworth's head, that was the way to do it. Honestly, my favorite part of the whole thing was like, oh my God, there's the helmet. And it looks good. Because that's one of the reasons why costumes never make it from the comic books into the world.
No.
Because they look stupid.
They don't translate well.
No. Hawkeye,
they just don't.
Hawkeye would have been my favorite. It's all purple. He's got a big H on his stupid helmet. Hawkeye looks like an idiot. And I love it. So.
And that's why he keeps it off. That's why Jeremy Renner keeps it off. Because he looks better just with the messed up hair.
It is the one perfectly handled by the X-Men in that movie when they're all wearing the leather. And he's like, you wear this with a straight face? He's like, what do you want, spandex? That's the right question. No, we do not want spandex. So suck it up. Anyway, so that's Ragnarok.
Now that sounds a little bit like the influence, what also influenced the Ring Cycle as well. Of course, we're talking about the old Norse mythology and everything else.
Sure,
the mythology of gods.
Yeah, and with Tolkien, you have a lot of the Germanic flavor that's wandered over from Middle Earth and all of that as well. So he borrowed from everywhere to give Britain its own mythology, which is cute because it already had some. But hey.
Yeah, because they had Arthur.
I got six movies. I'm fine.
Some watery tart threw a scimitar at him.
Right. Watery tart.
And that's what happened.
I got better. All right. By the flip of the coin, you get to go first. So I'm going to...
From gods to demigods to non-gods.
Right.
So I wanted to pick up something that's kind of in the ether right now. This is a couple of days ago by Greg Sargent in The Plumb Line. And it's all about those who would have us believe in their mythology when in fact they have none. So it starts out that the knives are out for Stephen Bannon and his scam is getting unmasked, which is beautiful because he does look like a pair of leftover 2 or 3 day old underwear. And that's what I can say about his face. That's just his face. I mean, he is of the kind of person like Breitbart who is going to walk right into a classic cardiac arrest or something cataclysmic, and he's just going to drop effing dead. You know, so Stephen K. Bannon has proven remarkably talented at creating a media mystique about himself. With his diligent assistance, he has been portrayed as a virtuoso of deliberately orchestrated disruption and an avenging angel to working class people such as his father, who lost just about everything in the 2008 shall we say, financial collapse. Oh, and so the mythology sort of was that he was so traumatized by it, he became the champion of the people. Back to him, who had been betrayed by global and financial elites. Bannon cleverly wields chaos to destabilize those elite foes in service of an economic nationalist mission that borders on messianism. So we got that, right? Messianic. But now Bannon is being primarily viewed inside the White House as a destructive force. Oh, surprise! A pariah, so to speak. And other senior advisors are trying to undermine him in the eyes of President Trump himself, according to multiple reports out a couple of days ago. Those reports undercut the narrative of Bannon as maestro of disruption and provide an occasion to probe the true nature of his self-ascribed economic nationalism. But what's the real story here? The New York Times reports that Bannon's removal on Wednesday last from his post at the National Security Council was part of the broader internal push that may diminish his role. Hey, his position has been undermined. Go ahead.
We just, you know, so we're just talking and you're pretty busy other places. So why don't you go do that and we'll just Security Council him here. And, you know, you go make sure that, you know, all the napkins are in the commissary, stuff like that. It's important work. We're not kicking you out. We're giving you time to do other stuff.
the inscribed T on the frosted part of the T that's on front of the tumbler glasses, you have to rotate them so they're facing outward from the cabinet. That's your job. Yeah. Make sure that gets done. By failure of the immigration ban, which has been blocked by the courts, Trump initially supported Bannon. Now he's been saying lately, yeah, I really didn't know him. Yeah, I didn't know him, you know, until like late into the campaign. You know, just like, you know, that you could just hear the of the saw that's like going underneath him, you know, like Chuck Jones style. He's about ready to get, you know, the ground taken out from under him. When Bannon actually delivered the ultimatum to House Republicans that they must vote on the GOP health care bill or else, they didn't vote. But then Trump handed off the health care to Vice President Pence. And Bannon is clashing with Jared Kushner and irritating the big man himself.
Hey, can I
go ahead?
Look, dude, yeah, but, I hate to interrupt your narrative flow because it kind of gives me chub, but I just wanted to throw in, if you've watched Batman v Superman.
Yes.
What? You excite me in a way that causes my bits to tingle. A little. I mean, no homo. Maybe a little. But still,
indeed,
Mike Pence, Lex Luthor,
a who bland men would look at and realize that he's more bland than they are.
No, the dude comes across as beige, but deep down inside, you know, he's boy, 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 boy. There. It's watch the progression of I'm going to say it's Michael Cera, even though it's the other guy, Jesse Eisenberg in the Batman v Superman extended cut. Until he ends up the gibbering thing in jail, that will be Mike Pence when he takes over 10 minutes after Trump is impeached and goes to jail. He's just...
Well, it's pretty much outsider versus family at this point, Jeff.
Yeah.
And we know that the core of the regime is family. And the regime is has to be perpetuated. That's why it's all Ivanka and Jared. They're making all the decisions.
You know, dear father,
okay, breakdown about Syrian children, and Trump eats his cake and launches missiles. That's what he says.
Sorry, you just made my asshole clench. Okay, carry on.
Mr. Kushner has said privately that he fears that Mr. Bannon plays to the president's worst impulses, according to the people with a direct knowledge of such discussions. Moreover, Mr. Bannon's Svengali, or the love guru style reputation, has chafed on a president who sees himself as the West Wing's only leading man. Several associates said the president has quietly expressed annoyance of the credit that Mr. Bannon has received for setting the agenda, and Mr. Trump is not pleased by the president Bannon puppet master theme promoted by magazines, late night talk shows, and Twitters. In practice, Bannonite disruption is upstaging the president and being blamed for the failure of the immigration ban. Ah, ha, ha. Remember, when there's a failure, fingers are pointed everywhere in one certain place, and Bannon is getting it. He's getting the finger. Recall that allies of Bannon initially cast the ban as a masterful coup. A senior administration official, gosh, who the hell could that be, recently told Bloomberg that Bannon deliberately arranged the release of the first ban on a Friday so that opponents could stage a massive weekend protest that would draw maximum attention while disruption. In reality, Bannon made hash of it. What's more, Kushner now allegedly believes that Bannon, presumably his combative nationalism, is aggravating Trump's worst impulses. Politico is reporting that it indicates a similar dynamic in which Kushner sees Bannon as an ideologue whose advice to Trump is making it harder for the president to win popular support. Stay put, Bannon. Don't leave. I want it to go worse. And an ally of Bannon sees the clash as one between the nationalists and the West Wing Democrats. They're West Wing. Oh, I see. You're talking about Jared and Ivanka. Yes. I would hold off this stinger for Kellyanne. But I'll put those in for Jared and Ivanka today. He also talked himself. Bannon, not Barron. We may talk about Barron later, but Bannon has himself talked a great game about his economic nationalism.
I'm really good at economic nationalism.
Which is supposed to distinguish him from the squishy globalists.
Squishy globalists.
Because now they're talking about, like, that's an insult? You're a globalist. You're a globalist. That's an insult. Inside the White House and the Ayn Randian limited government, Paul Ryan Republicans in Congress. But what has it really amounted to so far? When the health bill was tanking, allies of Bannon leaked that he saw an opportunity to undermine Ryan, whose bill, Bannon believed, was written by the insurance industry, suggesting Bannon and Trump secretly harbor more populist impulses than Ryan on healthcare. But where's the evidence of this? The White House fully embraced Ryanism at an absolutely critical moment.
By the way,
go ahead.
I have smelled dog farts with more with more interest in what the American people want than anybody in the White House right now could possibly have.
So at that absolutely critical moment of dog farting, throwing in with a plan that it could have hurt many lower-income Trump voters and rolled back coverage for millions, violating Trump's pledge of, quote, insurance for everybody, and his vow not to cut Medicaid, which will now he's going to go and cut Social Security, while delivering a huge tax cut for the rich. And then that blew up, too. If Bannon actually has a plan or even a vague vision for healthcare alternative to Ryanism that he supposedly disdains, no one has seen it. Okay? So, on taxes, Trump will forge ahead with a plan that delivers an enormous tax cut for the rich. This is what he's supposed to do, and that's what happened last week. And then they got to the end of it, and then they decided at the very last minute, we're going to take it back into the shop and we're going to re-tinker it. Bannon may also be open to repealing of the state tax. Ho-ho! Populist! It's possible that we may see Bannon's economic nationalism shaped Trump's coming agenda on infrastructure and trade. Bannon has vowed a massive public expenditure on infrastructure, but we still don't know whether or not Trump's actual plan will amount to much more than a tax break and a privatization scheme, which you know it will be. He will bring in foreign money, and what he will do with that is that will be his infrastructure scheme. Perhaps Trump will get some species of border readjustment, some kind of tax or tariff on imports, but we still don't know whether or not Trump's renegotiation of NAFTA will do anything to empower workers, and union leaders are skeptical based on what they've seen so far. Why would you believe anything they do? However, back to Bannon. His economic nationalism deserves more scrutiny. He claims he's angry at Wall Street elites, but Trump has already moved to cut Wall Street oversight. That's not necessarily contradictory. Bannon believes Wall Street needs to regain its sense of responsibility to workers on its own. Ho-ho! You have such great faith. But that isn't a plan. And at any rate, Bannon's true anti-elite ire seems aimed at administrators and bureaucrats. Because if you remember back, what he wanted to do, Jeff, was to destroy the administrative state. In practice, this seems to be translating into massive proposed cuts to environmental oversight that won't actually restore any coal jobs. In fact, you take all the jobs for Arby's within the United States and compare them to the actual coal jobs, more people work for Arby's. Science and medical research and programs that spur economic development in Trump's country. Based on what we've seen so far, what evidence is there that Bannon's economic nationalism amounts to much more than nativist nationalism? The travel ban, the immigration restrictionism, the wall on the Mexican border, and the support for right-wing nationalist movements worldwide. Even those that he pushes in the Vatican, of all things. We know what's going to happen to Bannon. It's going to happen to him, what happened to Flynn and everybody else who runs afoul. We know what the future holds for the crusty piece of underwear that is called his face. Back to you.
Back to me.
Please clap.
I'm clapping on the inside. Look, okay. Obviously, we have some lessons that have been learned, and I'll get to those in a minute at the end. But
very end.
You seem to give a shit about what we do in a way that makes me feel unprepared, even though I have been studying my ass off to make sure I got my shit together. And that is why when you go first, I always feel a little silly. Anyway.
Don't at all. Ever.
Oh, I always will.
Don't worry at all. But I mean,
I'm Steve Bannon, and I approve this message.
It's this whole thing is that the wheel masters, you know, are not at all. They're full of shit. They have been full of shit. And when you expose them and punch them in the face, they just fall down the steps into an open pit of glass and rebar.
Which, well, it's, if only that were literal instead of metaphorical, things might change. All right, look, let's take a break. When we get back on the other side, I am going to take you into a trip in the Wayback Machine, Chairman.
And if that's the case, let's not remember the kind of messages that we all receive all the time, like this one.
Chris, this is your mother. Get these dildos out of the dishwasher.
Quite.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Hey folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests, good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The Coffee Cast Podcast.
It's just another, because you probably saw the post I did a little while ago, and that was things my father never had to say. The first one, The first one was, whoever's using my Batman soap, stop. The second one was, whoever's drawing dicks in the steam on the bathroom mirror, stop.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I mean, it's just, it is just, I my dad was a good parent. I'm doing my best. But there are things that he has taught me, I hope are getting through to my kids, that he and I, you know, had our student teacher relationship in a much firmer tone, whereas mine's more like, here's a dick joke and a morality lesson. Because that's how we play it in the bail house. Okay, so a week ago, plus 100 years, or 50 and a week. That's right, right? 50 and a week ago. 50 years and a week ago. That's 100. The score is 20. I'm working on it. It's math. So 100 years ago last week, the United States of America entered World War I.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy shit.
Amidst what was at that time a very feverish and fervent nationalistic sort of, we're America, we just want to be America, and fuck the fact that half the world's come and saved our asses over and over again, and that Canada kicked our ass a little bit ago, 1812, but still 100 years 100 years.
Yeah, we did lose that one.
We got our asses spanked, which is funny because they remember, and that was 200 years ago. So it all starts in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Sarajevo. There's a guy named after a timid bull, or that might go the other way. I don't recall. But Franz Ferdinand of Austria was murdered in Sarajevo, which, by the way, is one of my favorite U2 songs, probably because Pavarotti's on it. And by a Bosnian Serb called Gavrilo Princip. Right? Now.
And it's not a funny thing either. I mean, it's you don't make jokes about it.
Are you fucking kidding me? His name was Franz Ferdinand.
He was not just a duke.
He was an archduke. I can't pay the rent.
You must pay the rent.
So, of Serbia. Right. So here's the thing is, as we noticed in the 90s, when Clinton did one thing especially right, the Serbs don't much care for the Croats, and together most of them don't care about anybody. So Austria-Hungary gets Germany on board, right? Germany's like, okie dokie, you betcha. And then they declare war on Serbia. Russia gathers its, I'm guessing, horses, because it's, you know, fucking 1914. And not a lot to mobilize, but by God, they did it. So Germany declares war on Russia. Italy declares nothing. We're good. Denmark is neutral. The Ottoman Empire, which was still a thing, and Germany...
Turks.
Yeah,
that's right. Don't forget when you watch Lawrence of Arabia, the Turkish Empire, the Ottoman Empire was very, very powerful.
Right. The Constantinopolans. And it's, well, not yet. Anyway, there it was. Germany signed a very secret treaty. Shh. It is Germans and the Ottomans.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Exactly. So Germany goes into Luxembourg. There's all this other shit going on. Germany goes into Longwy, the Iron Gate of Paris near the Luxembourg border, right? And on and on and on. Switzerland famously says, yeah, we're neutral too. Okay? Germany has lost its fucking mind. Again, as a precursor to losing its complete fucking mind just a few decades later. But it's sort of like, okay, we see that Franz Ferdinand was murdered. So, you know, we're with you guys. And to show you that we're with you, we're going to take over the world. So Britain starts screaming about Belgian neutrality. The German chancellor basically says, yeah, whatever. United Kingdom declares war on Germany, right?
Right.
August 4th, 1914. We are in this about a month and a week. And the United States is all, yeah, we're neutral too. Okay. Any of this sound, I don't know, hauntingly familiar and fresh? So,
yes.
Right. Okay. Now, what follows is a laundry list. I'm sorry, a grocery list of shit everybody did to everybody else over the next little while, right?
Right.
Okay.
You've permission.
Yeah. So I'm skipping a whole fuck thing.
That's fine.
So we keep on going, la 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 la, until we get to 1917.
Lusitania.
In 1917, on April 6th, okay,
the
United States declares war on Germany. It is still a fuck ton of time until we get around to doing anything about it, at which point we send troops over to France, right?
Right.
You got Woodrow Wilson outlines his 14 points, which was, you know, sort of a, it was a principles of peace to use as peace negotiations to end World War One. Right. He gave a speech in January of 1918, basically trying to get people to admit that we are all done with this big war shit. Right.
All done here with the war to end all wars.
Right.
We're all finished, yeah. Nothing to say. Move along.
But these 14 points are basically Wilson's way. Now, keep in mind, this war was going on for years before we show up. But way to go, America. Hey, we're here. I got some guys and some artillery and stuff. And, here's a list of conditions for Germany to, to surrender. Okay. 14 points. Only way to peace for the German government, as according to Woodrow Wilson. And I guess since it, in going through this as many times as I have, nobody else had anything, right? Nobody else had bothered to write anything down.
No.
So Woodrow Wilson, a little over a year after that, was granted the Nobel Peace Prize. Because
Jesus God.
He was the one that got everybody kind of moving in the direction of peace. Which ended up
with the nations.
Right. And the Treaty of Versailles.
The Treaty of Versailles.
Which, as you know, turned into...
Cruelly fucked over Germany. I'm just saying from their point of view, we got hosed.
Oh, sure. But, basically it was Article 231 of the Treaty of Versailles, the war guilt clause. And the Germans were basically, it was like, it's all your fault. So all the punishment goes to you, and you owe us about $300 billion insert domination of money here, which is why I said about. Right?
Wow.
A lot of money, which Germany did not have. Things are bad in Germany. We move forward, et cetera, et cetera. Right? You guys don't get an Air Force, such as there were at the time.
Yada, yada, yada. Sean Spicer.
There you go. Here's the thing, and this is not to tie a bow on anything, but you have a war that goes on for a few years. Americans, we're hiding in our bits and pieces, and we finally are like, oh, fuck, fine. We put down our beer, and our step family porn. We gird our loins, we strap on our bulletproofs, and we head off to war. And if there is one thing that Americans do well and have done well since the beginning, with the exception of that little kerfuffle in 1812, and to be honest, had it not snowed, anyway, a lot, because it was winter, you fucking idiots. Hey, let's invade Canada in the winter.
And we just can't do anything in the winter.
Right.
I'm a dentist. And the North Pole, that's all I do. No war, just dentistry.
So, anyway, war goes on. America shows up. By the way, Harry Truman was an artilleryman. He was an artillery captain.
In the WW1?
In the WW1.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
And the war to end all wars.
Oops.
And then he ends the other war to end all wars.
With basically the biggest piece of artillery ever shot. So when you look at this, and the reason I bring it up is because it's been 100 years, but you look at that and you compare it to now, right? We mm-hmm. used to show up reluctantly and finish the job, basically by being really, really good at violent things. Somewhere over the last bit, we have turned into being really, really good at violent things and really, really bad at finding good times to commit those things. Mm. So when you look at something like Syria, and this was a tantrum that I had on the Left Show over the week, and planned on going into much more detail about next week as well. But you look at Syria, and you look at the gas attack, and first, Obama draws the line in the sand, which I've always wondered why that's a thing, because sand shifts in the wind, right? Why is that a thing? Why is that tough guy talk? I don't get
why
it.
Why is that chosen?
Well, you just rub your foot over it and draw it over there. Who's going to know? It's fucking sand. Anyway, he draws a line in the sand. Chemical attacks happen. He says, okie dokie. And he wanders over to Congress. He says, hey, let's kick some Syrian ass. And Congress is like, fuck you, black feller. No.
That's
right. And then they blame him for it. Well, you should have done something about Syria, even though we told you no. Because George Bush, blah, 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 war powers, etc., which really should have had an expiration date, you fucking idiots. Right? So then you get the nationalist. You get the nationalist of Trump, who watches and has seen and has commented on since the beginning all of the atrocities happening in Syria and says, we better not get involved or bad president, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then another gas attack happens.
Right.
And whether that was Syria flexing its muscles at its Russian leash holders, whether that was Assad saying, ha ha, fuck you, Trump, whatever, a gas attack that when you compare it against the war and atrocity that has happened in that country over the last 4 years was actually pretty small. And my
By
point
comparison
being,
to all the other murder that right, has been going on and genocide.
Why? Is the corpse, the intact corpse of a chemically bombed, murdered child, so much more offensive than the bits and pieces of the war-torn bits and blood and insides and the inside-outs of women, children, and people of conventional warfare? Why is it fine to load up a fucking garbage can full of TNT and ration cans and drop that out of a fucking helicopter? Why is that super okay? But the minute that it's chemical, suddenly Ivanka tells her father, probably pillow talk, maybe you should bomb something. So he gets prepared to bomb. What happens? We call Russia and say, hey, we're going to bomb tomorrow, next day. We're not sure. But we're going to bomb, and we're going to bomb this particular thing. So that experts or the eyewitnesses in the area watch the Russians and the Syrians pack their shit, get out of the airbase. Nobody clears out the civilians in the area. We bomb. We kill 7. We wound, 14? Maybe more? Mm-hmm. And then the next day,
missed
everybody
everything.
Comes in. Sure, we missed. Sure, we fucking missed.
Missed everything. We didn't even fucking care. We set off the chain of events that let them know in advance all this shit was going to happen. This was a totally ineffective video op.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So so there we are. There we go. That's what happens. Okay? We bomb nothing. The next day they are back. They are running air raids out of that same airport. They're blowing up the same part of town that they just threw chemical weapons at. What have we done since? Nothing.
Nothing.
It cost, you know, here's the thing, and it's a implied cost, hard cost versus future cost. We sent 59 missiles, all at a cost of about $1.2 million each, not including the salaries, hourlies, wages, and benefits of all the people who drove the boats to get them there. But we don't buy Tomahawks anymore. We got a new missile in town that costs $1.7 to 1.9 million to replace. So we're blowing up the old shit. We're bringing in the new shit. So the total cost of doing nothing whatsoever other than letting us know that Brian Williams is still a fucking lunatic and has taken rule number 34.
Beautiful. The side lid. I'm warned by the words of Leonard Cohen, are guided by the beauty of our missiles. I lost the nightly news chair.
You basically say, hey, that particular videographer really knows how to get a camera angle. Wasn't that a nice pick? Anyway, I believe maybe for Brian Williams, and this is about the last time I will stand up for him, that watching his daughter get her ass eaten on HBO might have pushed him over the edge. Yeah. Because I got to tell you, I don't think I could process that without having a couple of fucking marbles drop. You know what I mean? So,
but she was great in Get Out.
I didn't see Get Out. I haven't seen it yet.
It's great. Oh, it's great. Oh, it's great.
I did. So, I mean, that's where I'm at is and I'll do World War II another day because it's the same thing. We're nationalist. We're America first. The world goes to shit. And we're finally like, oh, okay. Here we come to save the day.
When we get hit.
But now.
Now we're going to attack.
Now we do.
We're going to show them. We're going to show them what American force is all about now.
We break our rules. We stopped doing what was working and started doing new shit. All of it goes back to Vietnam. And all of this, sadly, can be laid in the lap, not only of Harry Truman, but moving forward to JFK. And from JFK, we get McNamara and we get Johnson, who take what probably could have been a nice, loud, semi-secret, covert thing and turn it into what Vietnam did become. But after Korea, we fucked up and we started doing shit different. And instead of going back to what works, which is we'll help you when things are in line, we'll be an asshole until it's time to not be an asshole anymore. Until we get to the Bush doctrine of let's punch them before they punch us. Now, I, growing up, was taught by my father, you never throw the first punch, but you always throw the last.
Right.
That is what America does. I'm fine with us being fucking world cop. I love what we did in Bosnia when we went in there and stopped everything and had zero combat casualties. As I've said again, there were casualties. They weren't combat casualties. There's a difference. Sleeping in the wrong place, getting run over by a tank when you're in your sleeping bag does not count as a combat casualty. That's friendly squash. So this is something that I'm watching. You know, I know Bannon's going bad. I know infrastructure's going bad, et cetera, et cetera. But what am I watching? I'm watching a further degradation of the way that America got shit done and managed to maintain their respect in the world, you know, to the fuck-ups that we are now. And the weird, we've gone from the tough guy standing up for the little guy to the fat, balding, beer-stained dipshit standing at the local bar bitching about the good old days and throwing punches at anybody who looks at him cross-eyed.
No
so,
kidding.
With that, let's take a little break. We're back on the other side. Let's talk about lessons we have learned.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America and all your problems are done, they don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
Huckabee, being a former pastor, and the biggest mouthpiece for the Christian right, has proven himself time and again to not be a Christian because he believes that Levitical law is absolute and was never removed by Christ.
Right.
So he's a rabbi, and therefore not Christian.
Yeah, yes. He's Rabbi Huckabee.
Why not? Then he gets to eat better deli food.
Oh. Haven't the Jews been through enough?
Yeah.
That was a good point.
I am pretty sure.
I know
we got a little bit to go, but I am pretty sure Taylor just won the show.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
Oh God! It was just like you troglodyte homunculus. You're just—it's that—it's that clip where they take O'Reilly and then they put in the producer, and they go back and forth. Oh my! I'm crying. It's so.
You gotta send me that
funny one.
I like that. I'll post it on the website.
Oh my God! Oh my God! That is so great. He goes, no, we're not going to do that. And he goes like, you troglodyte homunculus.
Nice. Which is funny because it's not true. He's not a homunculus. So, look, I don't have a lot of exposition on Bannon and the gang. To be
sure,
honest.
That's fine.
It's the guy's a fucking lunatic. He obviously was put in the position that he was put in because of money given to, handled, news, etc. You know, when you say something nice about Trump, you're his new best friend. He is a creature that, like an emotional vampire that feeds on praise. And the reason that he hates being made fun of so much is because when he receives non-praise, it sucks the power out of his anus eyes. Right? I'm just saying. The guy's creepy as fuck.
Yes.
So, when I look at Bannon, there's a lot of mistakes running around the West Wing right now, Bannon being one of the biggest ones. I mean, obviously Trump being the biggest one, but these are mistakes Trump made. Whereas it was the majority of the electoral voters, whatever the fuck that means anymore, that fucked up with Trump. But
precisely.
No, the fact that you have so many members of Trump's cabinet running around the world going, no, sir, don't worry about it. We got it. Don't leave the Twitter alone, okay? Because, you know, no, we know he said that. We don't mean that.
It's whatever. Improvise. This is why we keep our enemies on their toes.
Now,
because we improvise.
I will not be surprised if, you know, there's something tricky going on. But Rex Tillerson, can I just mention really quick?
What the fuck is that all about?
How he really seems to have his shit together? He's saying strong things in strong diplomatic ways. He's a Texas.
Different than what the rest of them are doing. I mean,
yeah.
But did you hear how he's like, he will not take questions from the media. He ditches the media. Anytime the media gets dissed or ditched, he just laughs, like this morning when Andrea Mitchell got cut off by the Russian ambassador.
You know what, though? Put yourself now. I'm not saying it's right because it's absolutely wrong. And when I give you this thing, this mental exercise for yourself to play, just remember that neither of us have anything to do with the safety of our country.
That's true.
But in any position of power where I was being followed around by a gaggle of reporters, I believe I would ditch them and laugh as well. The difference being, I would probably make one of them come with me and hang out. That's how I would do exclusives, is the only one that can keep up with me is the one who gets to chat. But, because everything to me is a competition. Everything I do, I want to have a competition. But, when you see the way he talks and you see the way that he presents himself, okay, and the public image through the media that he is giving the world, you know, it is not as fucking lunatical as what we get from Trump and people that are in his inner circle that are hanging out with him every day. No, I think he's an asshole. Yeah, I think what he's doing is wrong. However, he doesn't mumble. He doesn't stutter. He's not making up fucking words. And when the press does get a camera pointed at him, they do get a question asked to him, it's answered in a way that is not only easy to understand, but doesn't seem to be ducking as much as everybody else does. So, you know, no. Do I like him? No. But do I like him a lot more than I like most of the other motherfuckers that are in there? You know,
Here's let me, and one last picture to paint as we move on to anything you may or may not have learned today. But when you talk about the destroyed underpants face of Steve Bannon, it should be noted that it's on a large man that has been sitting for years in tighty whities to the point where they have been rubbed, they have been skidded, they have been farted into grays and browns.
Hershey squirted.
Right. And so, yeah, they've got to be, I mean, these are some mangled fucking underpants that, that Steve Bannon's face was made out of.
Bloated.
Yeah.
Lip spots.
Yeah. And then the legs sewn shut and the bulk of it filled with old, cold, wet oatmeal.
He's a single human centipede to himself.
He's what happens.
Some days I just absolutely compete and I win.
He's what happens when a yeast infection becomes sentient and starts to move in a bipedal manner. He is vaginal discharge. Right? He's the stuff that comes out when you eat too many chips fried in Lestra. I'm calling him anal leakage.
Oh, yes.
All right. What do you
we
got?
Don't like him.
You got anything?
We don't like him at all. No. And the lesson is giants always fall. Bullies always fall. All you know is those people like him, always, they have their time. It may not even go very well for them. And then they go down. And believe me, I kind of want them in the White House. I want them to battle it out amongst each other so that nothing gets done. So that by the time we get to some kind of traumatic event, such as the FBI, finally indicting certain people in the White House, we get to the midterms. What happens in the end is that then they all go down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm kind of all terrified by about what Sessions is about to do with the Voting Rights Act and everything else. Damn these people. God damn these people. God damn them.
Well, he can't, since he doesn't exist. Because the Christian Jesus was eaten by the serpent of Midgard. Jormungandr.
Right.
I'm saying it wrong.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget.
Jormungandr. The serpent of Midgard. All right. Well, I'm willing to call it a show. You willing to call it a show?
I'm willing to call it a show, and I'm willing to take us out in a way that hasn't been taken out. Just like that, Jeff. And to all of our fine listeners, we appreciate everyone listening to us. Download a show for yourself, for a friend.
I can't believe you're taking me out to a USO show.
Until next time.
like to be the president. Yeah. So I can show you how your money's spent.
Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair?
Sometimes I don't speak right.
All right.
But yet I know what I'm talking about.
Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair? Why can't we be fair?
I know you're waking for the CIA. They wouldn't have you in the mafia.